everybody. Welcome to Get Real with Rick Dancer. It's great to have you here. We're kind of taking a new turn in what we're doing for podcasting and our video podcasts and stuff. And I'm going to focus a lot more on people and what they do. And so I was going through my records and I kind of hang out on social media so I can kind of spy on people I used to know and people I don't know. Find some of the coolest stories this way. And I was looking over the files the other day at Facebook and I saw one of the most honest people who writes pretty bluntly and openly about his life and what he does. His name's Nicholas Hammond in Oregon, where I come from. Everybody calls him Nick the Trainer Dude. In fact, I told someone today, Nick, I know you're in the green room. You can hear me. I told someone, yeah, I'm doing an interview with Nick the Trainer Dude. Oh, how is he? God. He's branded himself as Nick the Trainer Dude, and it has stick because that's what he does. But that's part of what we might talk about. But it's going to be more really about what most of us deal with. Pasts that aren't perfect and trying to always get around that and not get rid of it, but I'll make it part of our lives, but also to kind of dream a little and do some different kind of things. So I think this will inspire you. I think it'll make you feel, I hope, warm and fuzzy. I hope more than anything it gets you off your dead ass to do something with your life, because there's too many people out there existing rather than living. And at Get Real with Rick Dancer, we are all about living. And we couldn't do our shows without sponsors like Chris Dental Family Dentistry out of Eugene, Oregon. Dr. Michael Bratland is a big believer in civil liberties, your rights, and he's a big believer in it's your body, it's your choice. And he is a great dentist. We get him about 14 to 15 new clients every month, which we love because there's a lot of people out there who wants somebody who believes what they believe, not necessarily agrees with everything, but believes what they believe. Also, Albert Taylor, Endless Possibilities, amazing organization, works with people with different abilities in the community. If you're looking for a place, something to start over, if you want a job that is going to be really hard, but you'll go home every night knowing you're making a difference in people's lives, Albert Taylor, Endless Possibilities, located right there in Springfield, Oregon. And New Leaf Hyperbarics and Wellness Center. Nick, I don't know if you've done this yet, but oh my gosh, Hyperbarics is so great. And Matt McCarl and his team, they do massage, they do hyperbarics, and they also do light therapy. When I'm home, I go in there and love getting a hyperbaric treatment. You come out feeling like you're high. You don't have to smoke any weed. You just come out feeling like all that oxygen, 100% pure oxygen, has just got you like. And Rains Heating and Air Conditioning out of Cresswell, big believers in what we do. They love our content. They came to us and said, we want to help sponsor your show. We're new and we want to get the word out about what we do. And those are the kind of people we love. Montana Oral Surgery and Dental Implant Center right here in Helena, Montana, where they, what I like about them is they put you out. Not put you out, but knock you out when you have to have a treatment. I don't want to feel my teeth being pulled. I don't want to feel implants being put in. I don't want to feel oral facial surgery. I don't want any of it. I want to be out, and they do that very well. And our last sponsor, Fairway Independent Mortgage Company, Greg Henkel. When you move from Oregon to Washington, Oregon and Washington to Montana to Idaho, there's certain rules you have to know. He knows them and he can take care of you as you're moving. All right, let's get on to our topic here. I'm going to get that out of here. The interesting thing about this. Hey, Nick, how you doing?
I'm good, Rick. How you doing, sir?
I'm good, man. This is Nick Hammond, you guys. The weird thing about what I do now is, yeah. I used to, when I was on the news, you had people like were you know, hitting the commercials and turning the sound and all this stuff. And I've learned you just now I'm just here. So I'm a one man band just going boom, 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 boom.
You were selling me. I'm ready. I was ready to go to the dentist and I was ready to go down and do some hyperbaric chamber and get a massage.
You tell you what, Nick, you really should go ask Matt and try that hyperbaric, especially with what you do.
Yeah.
When working with people, because I mean, all the aches and pains that they hyperbarics, they're doing stuff now with that. It's helping kids with autism, and then Alzheimer's, older people with Alzheimer's, they're having some good results, like, because it's just pure, and that's the thing, it's just pure oxygen. And I'll tell you, the first time I did it, I came out and Matt goes, "You look like you better sit down." I said, "I feel like I'm stoned."
Yeah, you feel good.
Of course, the first thing he said was, "How do you know?" And I said, "Well, yeah. I have a past."
Yeah, don't we all?
So Nick, tell people kind of what you do now, and then we'll kind of go back in history a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. So my name's Nick Hammond. They call me Nick the Trainer Dude. I own a personal training studio. I own a supplement store here in Eugene, Oregon. And for the past almost 20 years now, I've been a personal trainer. For the last 10 years, I've actually owned my own business. I open my studio up at 5 a.m. and I personally train clients one-on-one from 5 o'clock in the morning till 7 o'clock at night. And I have been for the last 10 to 15, 20 years. We'll get into my past a little bit, but part of what I do now is I get to help people add health and fitness into their life, right? We get to get healthy people come see me for all different walks of life, whether they just want to lose weight or feel better. So a big part of my job now is that's what I'm doing, is just helping people stay motivated for fitness, different reasons. But it wasn't always what it is now, right? I have 6 children. I have 3 from a previous marriage. They're all in their 20s. They all have kids. I have 6 grandchildren. I'm 44 years old. I have 3 children with my current wife that I've been married to for 10 years. I have a 1-year-old and I have a 26-year-old. So, there's a lot.
Well, you know what? At least I'm thinking this healthy thing is doing something for you.
We're making humans. All right.
You're making babies. That's for sure.
I got that thing down I had kids in my teens. And now I had kids in my 20s, 30s, and 40s. And I told my wife, I'm like, let's just roll into my 50s, 60s, and 70s and have a kid in every decade of my life. And let's just roll out strong, you know?
And she looked at you and said, go get a vasectomy.
Yeah, yeah. She's about done. You know what I mean? She's done. So
what in terms of like, because this is kind of interesting because it's that time of year when people are, I saw a great reel the other day on social media, had a guy walking into the gym, and I'm going to go imitate this one because he's walks into the gym and then it was just thousands of people in the gym.
Yeah.
Now I would put it in going to February, walking in the gym, and most of those people are gone.
Are gone. Absolutely.
What do you see as the biggest hurdle for people? People watch me do workout stuff and they go, oh my God, I can't believe you even do that. And it's like, well, I've done it so long. It's an obsession and it's part of if I don't do it, I feel guilty. You know what I mean? I don't mean guilty in a bad way. It's like, it's my mental health, honestly.
I was talking about coming on the show with you and I remember 20 years ago working in the gym and you would be, light just showed up. You can still see me, Rick?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember you coming into the gym 20 years ago when I was just barely a front desk boy trying to sell gym memberships. And here come Rick in just looking great, moving around, loving life. And you've been doing this for so long, the same as me. I'm 44. I started exercising when I was 17. The biggest hurdle people have is consistency. Everybody comes in with this big vision, right? I got a guy come in and they're like, I'm 50 pounds overweight. I'm eating like crap. I'm not exercising. How do I change it? And you get them started on a program, but then they got family, they got friends, they got barbecues, they got work. And then within 3 weeks, they're failing. And it's partly because of all the people in their own circle. Right. All their friends and their family are like, well, let's go out to dinner. You've been working hard. And it's creating that consistency, not just for 30 days, but for 30 years. Like you probably have been exercising. I've been exercising for 25 years and teaching people that we're not going to have a 6-pack in 3 months, but we need to keep working at it for the next 10 or 15 years. That's the hardest part, is really letting them teaching them that we're going to keep going at this. Even once we get a six pack, even when you start feeling better, this is something. And I know it's the same for you and I. If we don't exercise today, it's more of a mental suffer than it is a physical suffer. I can slip into a depression really quick.
Me too.
For lack of exercise. Like, and I'm like, oh, and my wife's like, look, you need to go for a walk. You need to go for a run. You need to go lift some weights. And then I'm right back to being Nick the Trainer Dude.
Yeah. See, that's how I am, is if I miss a day and, you know, and I take Sundays off. And Kathy and I have kind of made a lifestyle where it's like we work out at the gym usually Monday through Friday. And then Saturday we go out and, you know, last weekend we went and ran 8 miles up a snowy mountain.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, and I said, this is why we do this. Yeah. Why we go to the gym 5 days a week is so we can be out in nature and enjoying our life. And yeah, we have aches and pains and stuff, but you know, I was watching a David Goggins or listening to a podcast with him and Andrew Huberman. And he was going, you know, just stop feeling sorry for yourself. And so today I didn't feel like it, cause I was supposed to run today and the wind is too big and all this. So I go into the gym and I'm doing, so I picked all the things I hate, you know, those pushups where you have the dumbbells in your hands and you're doing, and then you pull them up.
You got a row. Yeah. The renegade row. Yeah. It's hard.
So all the things I hate, I picked. Yeah. And then I was kind of whining a little bit and I said, okay, you know what, since you're whining, you got to do 10 more. So you got to just, perfect. I'm adding 10 more because this is what you get, Rick, for being a big baby.
Yeah.
And it's really getting a handle on that. Plus, don't you think people have a kind of an unrealistic view of what I get so sick of on TikTok and all of them, you know, okay, gentlemen, not every guy walks around without his shirt on and has an 8-pack. And I mean, it's just all over the internet.
It's like, all over the internet right now is messing up people's visions of what being fit really is. Like I competed as a bodybuilder. So I posted a lot of videos of me or pictures on stage getting ready for a show. But for the most part, I'm not even walking around my own gym with my shirt off when I'm lean. We're just working out. Right. And the social media has totally ruined that for a lot of people. And it's intimidating. Part of my job in my studio is I actually don't get busy in January, but when people go to the big gyms and they start to see the crowds and they're not succeeding, usually February, March, and April is when I get busy, because that's when they reach out for help. And that's when they want some professional assistance and someone to like motivate them past that plateau, right? The people that really are trying to stick it out and really try and instill a vision of, we're just here to be healthy and fit. We're here so at 50 and 60 and 70, I can go run 8 miles on a Saturday.
Right.
And that's what I try to teach people. But people are, everybody's worried about the weight, right? Look at society. Everybody's overweight. Even people that are fit, everybody's carrying around extra weight. And so the biggest part of my job is really motivating people on how to eat better and get their body losing weight properly. And that is what I spend most of my time doing. Even on top of training people in the gym, it's really constantly encouraging people to eat clean food, make good choices, stay consistent. And that's the job more than anything else.
What food do you think people put into their bodies the most that is doing the most damage, that are working against them in terms of what you're trying to do?
So I don't think it's what people are putting in their bodies. It's what people are not. So the biggest mistake, 100 out of 100, is people don't eat enough protein.
Yeah.
So everybody's reading, especially with Instagram now, right? And TikTok, everybody's on keto or paleo or whatever. And they all work. I have clients on all kinds of diets, but I don't care whether you're 10 years old or you're 90 years old, your body needs a certain amount of protein to metabolize fat. Bottom line. And we can still eat carbohydrates. We can eat high fat, low fat, but until we stabilize protein, you're going against yourself, right? So I have to convince people. Most people come in, let's say a 50-year-old woman comes and sees me. She's eating 60 grams of protein a day and 200 grams of carbohydrates. I got to get her eating 140 grams of protein a day and 100 grams of carbohydrates. Once I start doing that, the body starts dropping fat every single day. And they start looking better and feeling better. But convincing humans to eat 140 grams of protein, especially females, and then someone like you, Rick, I got to get you eating 200 grams of protein a day,
right?
Or 220. That's a lot.
That's a lot. And
that's
I do
like one egg only has 6 grams of protein. Like,
right. I've beefed mine up. I'm doing the Mountain Ops, you know, protein. I really like that because it's thick. I make it with less water and like a pudding so that I feel like I'm eating something.
Yeah, no.
It's tricking your brain.
I have people at night, I have them take like a sugar-free snack pack, like Jell-O or the chocolate pudding, put a scoop of your protein powder in it, mix it up. Now at night, you have a little treat, plus you're getting your 30 grams of protein in. Because it's not, we have to cut out all this stuff, which society makes us think we do. We just have to learn how to eat protein consistently so our body will metabolize the food properly. That's the biggest mistake people are making.
So it's about a gram a pound. Is that right?
In general, I would to throw out some numbers for your listeners. If you're a female, whether you're 300 pounds or you're 140 pounds, you need to consume around 140 grams of protein per day. In 20 years, that's the magic number for almost all females, no matter what age you are. No matter what weight you are, and most men is 200 to 220. So the gram per pound of body weight, you can get scientific about it, but really it's a gram per pound of lean muscle mass. And most people don't even know how to figure that out, right? Because then you got to go get your body fat checked. There's some other calculations, but for most men, 200 to 220, and most women, 140, maybe 150 in grams per day.
So if you're not eating that, you're developing more fat.
Well, you're just storing, your body's going to store all the calories you're eating as in your fat cells. And so when you're only eating 60 grams of protein, your body's going to take that chicken and those vegetables and that clean food you're eating and still store it in your fat cells, right? And so that's where stabilizing that protein, it allows make sure the muscle's protected. The body has no chance at eating the muscle for fuel. And now when it's hungry, it's going to go in and utilize the fat for its energy.
I started doing creatine about 6 months ago, and I really like it. I don't hope you don't tell me I'm not doing the right thing.
No. I have whether they're 12 years old or 70 years old, I put people on creatine. It's a great supplement. Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I gained 12 pounds and it scared the hell out of me because I've weighed 178.
Most of your life. Ever, yeah.
You know, but then I put it on and it's like, you look and my wife goes, you look like bigger, much more muscular.
Yeah, muscular.
I don't look fat. I mean, you get a little bit of like
water
legs
weight with it, but yeah.
Yeah. But it's like, I'll tell you, I feel better and a lot more ladies online flirting with me.
Whatever it takes.
Not that I need that. I have a wife. But it's like,
I hang out with ladies all day long. It's my job. You know what I mean? And I train a lot of men too, but you know, ultimately we all want to feel good. We want to look good. And the better we look, I don't care what anybody says, we're going to feel better about ourselves.
Right.
And as a man going into your 40s and 50s, there's a lot of men in this today's society that are 30 years old that are really out of shape and they're living vicariously through their children at these. I'm taking all my young boys to these wrestling tournaments and you got 400 grown men in a room that are overweight. They're drinking beer. They're not exercising and they're living through their 9-year-old.
Right.
And they have to start taking care of themselves. They have to stop drinking. They got to start exercising a little bit more. And it's something that you have to wake up as an individual and want to make that change. It's hard. It's fitness.
So how did this all, I mean, you grew up in Springfield, right?
Nope. So let's we can get into it a little bit. So I grew up in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Oh, okay.
And I moved to Eugene when I was about 17. So a little bit of my backstory is, my mom was married 5 times before I was 13 years old.
Wow.
I had five stepdads. My dad was in and out of my life. My real dad, there was a lot of father figures. There was a lot of alcohol and drug abuse in my young life with my parents. We traveled around a lot. There was just a lot of, my mom is, my best friend now. My mom's in her 60s. She's been sober over 20 years.
Wow.
But my mom was crazy growing up but she always took care of me, but my mom was a little wild. She was, I love her to death, but my mom, it was crazy, right? I just come home. There was a new man sitting in a chair telling me what to do. Right.
Yeah.
And so by the time I was 12, 13 years old, I was already getting high.
Wow.
I, I was abusing, and I was in rehab by the time I was 16 years old here at Lane County at Looking Glass Community Services. By the time I was already 16, most of my friends were in prison by the time I was 16 years old. And I was just around a lot of really rough people at a young age in my life, right? And so there was a lot of drug abuse. I had dropped out of high school at, you know, in the eighth or ninth grade. And when I came and moved to Oregon, I was living, you know, this area, but I was living on First and Jefferson Street underneath the bridge. But I was in the apartment across the street. It's a pretty sketchy area.
Yeah.
This is where my mom was living when I showed up. I'm like, shit, mom, I can't live here. This is the hood, you know? And so within like 3 weeks, I meet this girl who's homeless, my ex-wife. She was homeless at the time. She's a 15-year-old homeless girl. There's a big homeless population everywhere, but here in Eugene. And I get her pregnant, and I'm 17 years old, and she's 15. And everybody in my world is high. My dad's high. My mom's not sober. Everybody's high. My brother's high. And I go get enrolled at Looking Glass Community Services. They're a local agency here in Eugene, Oregon that takes care of youth. They have a lot of different programs. You probably work with them or know.
I used to do their auctions and stuff like that, MCM and stuff, which I'm glad that's kind of a fun tie. So
it is, because Looking Glass, I've been back to a lot of their auctions now as an adult, and I go share my story to help raise money, because if it wasn't for Looking Glass, I wouldn't be here talking to you or doing all the other cool things I'm doing in my life, right? So there I was, 17 years old. I enroll back into high school at Churchill High School, and I take my daughter with me to high school. So now I'm 17. I have a baby.
That program, because they have that program for
this teen parent program at Churchill High School. I was the only guy out of 30 women in Lane County sitting in this class. All right. Talk about chicks trying to hook up with the trainer, dude. They were loving me. You know what I mean? They're like, this guy takes care of his kid.
He's a dad who actually cares. Wow.
Yeah. So my day at 17, I got up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I lived on River Road, and I rode a bike down to downtown Eugene to the old Ironworks gym. It was called Pacific Nautilus. And I started working out in the morning when I was 17. So that's how I got into fitness, was I wanted to be a bodybuilder. So I started going to the gym. I would ride the bike back to River Road, pick up my daughter. I would put her on my chest, and I would ride the city bus over to Churchill High School. I would go to high school all day long. I got done doing that, and I would meet my ex-wife downtown Eugene and drop the baby off, because she didn't go to high school. She just wanted to stay home. I took the baby with me to school. And then I would go down to the Woodsman Grill and Cafe in Springfield and wash dishes until 11 o'clock at night. And I did that every single day of my 17th year of life. That's what I was doing. Is I worked out at 4 a.m. I went to high school. I rode a bike. I didn't have a car. My license got suspended, and I washed dishes for $4 an hour to try and pay rent.
So was that the point where everything kind of changed for you?
That's the point where I made a decision to change, right? I was going to Looking Glass, and I was like, I'm not going to live like the rest of the people in my world, right? I refused. I was like, there's got to be a better way to live than the way these people are living. And so I made a decision at that age, at 17 years old, that I was going to take care of my daughter, and I was going to find a way out. And bodybuilding was a way for me to go exert that energy as a young man, and that vision of becoming a bodybuilder, which way down the road, we can talk about that in a minute, was something that ended up happening. But that was a huge part of my life. That was sometimes now when I get weak and soft and I don't want to go run in the rain or whatever it is, I remind myself about that 17-year-old kid that I used to push on Sundays. I would load my daughter up on a stroller with two bags of laundry and a backpack. And I would push the bike in the stroller down to the laundromat, wash my laundry, get my groceries, load them in my backpack. And that was my Sunday at 17 years old. And when I think about that young kid being such a savage with nobody in his world helping him, nobody encouraging him, it reminds me to keep going now, as I have it a lot easier because I've created a great life for myself.
So is that why you do what you do today?
That's exactly why I do what I do, 100%. And I help people all over this country, all over everywhere. I share this story, right? Because I want you, you don't have to live as hard as I lived. You don't have to have the path that I have, but no matter where you come from, there is a great life to live out there. And it doesn't have to be that hard. It may be hard now. You might have to go through some hard times, but I did it when I was 17 years old with nobody in my corner. But it was but I had a vision of who I wanted to be. I didn't know how I was going to get there. I didn't know what it was going to take, but I was just willing to do more work than everybody else when I had nothing.
Do you think people underestimate the power of the will?
Oh, every single day we all do. Absolutely. I see it every day in people. I see people come in because people come in to see me in the gym. And then some people just come in and they're like this 200-pound woman who's 50 years old. And 6 months later, she's 120 pounds. Wow. And then other people come in and they're 200 pounds and they're 50-year-old woman. And 2 years later, they're still 200 pounds. But the will of the human being is so powerful. But the thing that I think, and you'll attest to this, I believe, is we have to want something so bad that we're willing to do whatever it takes to make it happen. And when I was a young man, I wanted to not live in poverty for so badly that I was willing to do anything and everything I could to not live off food stamps anymore. And Rick, it took me till I was 30 years old to not live on food stamps.
So do you think that that's almost an advantage for you then?
Oh,
you
yeah.
Know, for people like, because I listen, your story sounds a lot like, you know, David Goggins and stuff. And I think, you know, I think some of us, you know, maybe we grow up too easy or, you know, I mean, everybody has difficulty. I'm not saying that, but you had to make a decision for yourself. Whereas yes. A lot of us,
you're not put in those, but I have a brother who grew up just like me. My brother's currently in a prison in Idaho. So we grew up the same exact way up until 17. He just never chose to quit getting high. So we all have decisions to make. I could have chose to kept getting high and not raise my children, right? I could have made that decision. But because I was forced into there, it is an advantage for me because like you're saying, even my young boys, even my daughters who we can get into that a little bit, they're grown now, but they went through some stuff. They didn't have it as hard as I had it. And they're softer because of it.
Right. Yeah. I think that, you know, I'm learning as, you know, I'm 64 years old and I'm starting to learn that, comfort is the goal of the United States and it shouldn't be.
Oh, Rick, you literally just this year, I was trying to be comfortable. All right. I'm like, I deserve it. I'm making a little money now. I got this, I got that. And it was the worst year of my life because I was trying to be comfortable.
Right.
But I don't know that we deserve comfort. I don't know that we, I just don't think we do.
I don't know. That, you know, I mean, but again, I'm being Gogginized. You know, where he says, you know, life is shit and this is what it is. And you have good days and you have wonderful moments, but you're going to struggle for the, you know, if you're living, you're probably going to struggle for the rest of your life, you know, because at my age, people are retiring and, you know, my wife and I are going, God, you know, we should sell our house and buy a Sprinter van and make it into a studio, like a podcast studio that we just travel the country.
Yeah.
And that be our retirement. And I'm going, yeah. And then we have to do this, this, and this, but then we get to do this, 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 and this to make that happen. Right. Because otherwise, you know, I think you just sit home and people start just getting bored and what is there left to, you know? I mean, you can only go to a sandy beach so many times and I'm getting ready to go to Mexico, but that's not how I see a retirement. I want to be working out for the rest of my life. You want to be living,
you want to be pushing yourself. And I think that it's important. That's why I love exercise so much.
Me too.
Because whether you're 64, 44, 14, 90, you make a decision to go put yourself in uncomfortable situations to be better.
Right.
And if your life is easy or it's chill and it's comfortable, go get uncomfortable. Goggins talks about it all the time because I was forced to be uncomfortable. I had a decision to make. And once I decided I was going to win, then the battle began. Then it got hard. But you hear all that stuff like choose your hard, right? It's hard to be homeless and it's hard to have a big ass house.
Yeah.
It's hard to have a job and it's hard to be unemployed. It's hard to have a wife, and it's hard to be single. Choose your hard, right? And life is hard. My life was hard. My life's still hard. I got the, and it's hard for everybody. I'm currently been rebuilding a house that burned down in a forest fire.
Yeah, tell them what you're doing. So this is the fire from a few years ago.
So the fire, so 2020, I'm living a good life. I finally at work, I created this lifestyle where I'm like working 3 days a week at the gym, right? So I have Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, I'm working 3 16-hour days, and I created 4 days a week off. My wife, me, and the kids, all of 2020, we're like living life. This is when COVID happened. Then they shut my gym down, and my three-day-a-week schedule went to shit because I had to shut my gym down. Anyway, so we're like, I finally at a point in my life where we're doing good. I'm currently writing a book. It's called Chicken and Potatoes, The Evolution of Nick the Trainer Dude. Uh-huh. And we couldn't find an ending to the book, right? And it's funny because in September of 2020, I get a call or my phone goes off at 12 o'clock at night. And it says, emergency alert, evacuate now. I go outside and I look around and there's 2 inches of ash all over my yard, house, and cars. I go back inside. I wake my wife up and my kids. And I'm like, we got to leave. There's a forest fire. We load up in a vehicle. We take nothing. We take one laundry basket of clothes, the three dogs, and the two kids. And we go out on McKenzie Highway and we drive away. The next day I get a call from a firefighter saying my house is burnt to the ground completely. I have nothing left.
Yeah.
And I'm like, at this point in my life, you know, we missed a lot of my story, which we can get back into, but there's been a lot of hard crap. And my instant reaction is just go to work. My wife, she comes to me the day of that we found out our house was burnt down. And she said to me, I need one day to be pissed off about this before you bring all your positive shit to me. Because I deserve to be pissed for one day before I hear about how great everything is right now, because I just lost everything. So now fast forward 3 years later, I'm building my own home, which is amazing, by the way. And we've been living in a camp trailer for almost like 40 months with my kids, dogs, my wife. It's been a hot, hard 3 years.
That's tough stuff.
And life is good right now. I'm making money. I'm Nick the Trainer Dude. There's a lot of good things going on in my life, but it's still hard. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I see. And I honestly believe that is, you know, I don't know. I feel like that's what God designed it to be.
Oh, 100%.
You know, and I think what we've done is we've created so many, you know, great inventions, you know, and computers and cars, and that we don't have to. I mean, I remember I had a car. My first car was a Datsun 510. It had a manual choke. And when it didn't work, you'd pull that choke out and you had to go over, and then I'd spray some shit in the carburetor and that would get us started. Now it's everything's computerized and it tells me when somebody's, you know, rubbing my butt, and it tells me, everything. You know, whatever. It'll do anything for me. And I think we've almost become a culture. And then, so if you get that spoiled, then where's the how do you find the challenge in life?
Well, I think that's where fitness comes in play for people. Right. And it does for me now. Like you're okay. If you're comfortable, let's say you're just living a decent life. You're married, you got a family, you guys are making money, your bills are paid, but everything's comfortable. Those are some of the most miserable people I know. They're unhappy. They're depressed. Their marriages are going south. They're drinking 2, 3, 4 times a week. They're overeating, and they're all when they should be utilizing this time elsewhere. But when they switch that into fitness, when they go get uncomfortable, when they decide to go run a 30-mile race, or they decide to do a bodybuilding show, or they do a Spartan race, or go to any kind of fitness, now you're choosing to be uncomfortable. Those people start becoming happy because they're creating resistance in their own life. And then all of a sudden they work through that, and then they're smiling on Instagram now and telling everybody they're pissing their friends off because they're always so happy.
Well, isn't that interesting how we're almost going back to, so everything's so modernized that people don't have to walk anywhere or ride their bike or anything. And now look at all the bike challenges, 100-mile bike rides. We're almost going back to where we came from, like caveman days, where, and you know, there's some of these competitions are real rough and tumble.
They are,
you know, and I think it's because we, you know, like when my wife and I, we love mountain biking here because, I mean, you're out with like you and I were talking before we went on the broadcast, you know, there's grizzly bears. Yeah. And so people, you ride your bikes out there, and I'm going, you know, that's part of the, that's part of why.
It's intense. Yeah. Because on the back of your mind, every minute you're wondering if
it could happen.
It could happen. And so that fear, but that's the exciting thing about it, right?
And I'm prepared. I've got a gun and I've got bear spray. So it's not like I'm going out there and being stupid, but it's also like, I'm not going to let, it's kind of like when the dark time happened with COVID.
Yeah.
And when that came about, it's like, I am not going to be ruled by fear. I was working for Elements, doing their marketing stuff. I called Brian and I said, Brian, there's going to be a mass shooting or something. I don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. I said, I have got to get to the gym. So he goes, let me give you the code. So Kathy and I would go in there every day on our own, and there'd be nobody there in the dark, turn on the lights, and we'd be in there, and you know, Sarah might pop in or something, we were working out the whole time. People goes, what are you doing to work out? I said, oh, we found something.
It was funny. Cause when COVID happened, I shut my gym down for 1 week. And then a week later I got on my social media and I just said, hey, I'm going back to work. I'm opening my gym. And because I lost about 70% of my clients in one day. Like one day I was broke, like no more money. And I was sitting home and I'm like, what am I going to do? I got to work. And so I just said, look, I'm going to go to work until someone physically shows up to my place and tells me I can no longer work. Yeah. And I went in my little studio in Springfield and I opened it up and I was busy instantly. And I had people, my friends, my close friends that would call me and tell me, you're going to go to jail. You can't be opening your, and I'm like, you have a comfortable job. You get to go.
Exactly.
To. All right. I have to work. And I just opened up and I was respectful and safe as I possibly could be, but I just went to work and nothing ever happened. I never got a phone call. No one ever bothered me. People got fit and I went back to living my life, you know?
I agree with you. Cause I think, I mean, I can't tell you how many pension people living off a government pension were screaming at me and yelling at me because I was back doing free shows for most of my clients couldn't afford it, but I had to keep working. So I was doing free stuff for them. And then they came back when the pandemic was over or when we could go back and stuff. Yeah. But it's like, I had to find a way to exist and keep going like that. And then I get bludgeoned for taking a PPP loan because I was forced to go basically out of business.
Yeah.
And, you know, so then all the same people who were yelling at me for, you know, speaking out against some of this stuff, then are screaming at me for taking the loan that they made me have to take because they shut me down. And it's you know, what is this stuff? Yeah. But I think that's what I think the last 4 or 5 years I've learned. And I think that's why I've become more intentional about living.
Sure.
Is because I saw what can happen when you're not. Yeah. And I think that's what people don't understand about working out and exercise and eating and, you know, like I'm doing more supplements, just a lot more protein. I'm obviously now after talking to you, I'm going to have to increase that. Cause it's like going, I know I'm not doing 200 and I know I'm
not there.
I need to get that up there, but I didn't understand. I didn't know that by eating that protein, it kept your body from, if it doesn't have enough protein, it's going to store that protein in the fat where it stores fat.
Well, protein is still a calorie, right? And so, people get super complicated with it, but the basis is eat your, find that number and figure out how to get it in. Most people have to consume a protein powder a couple times a day, along with 3 good meals. And most people will be there and get in, but it's that consistency over time. You know, everybody's in a big rush to see these changes. Everybody's in a big rush, but you've been exercising for as long as I can personally remember going into a gym. I've seen you in gyms my entire existence when I was literally just riding Huffy bikes there and no one knew who I was, right? Like, and that's the big key is that consistency.
Yeah. So how does God play into all this for you?
So like, you know, we got kind of in my story, right? I'm like, I'm 20 years old. I'm 3 years sober. I'm 17 years old. I've been in rehab. I'm working for Looking Glass. I'm working these other jobs. I have this baby and now I'm 22 years old and I have 2 more babies because I'm uneducated. I don't have any, I'm not getting high and I live with a chick. So what are we doing? We're making humans, right? There's no one.
You weren't intending to make humans, but you were doing all the activities that create humans.
So here I am. I'm like 22 years old. I'm, I have three children. I'm making minimum wage at two or three jobs. And I'm just, it's hard. I still don't have a car. I'm riding a bus with this family. I have three daughters. My wife is young. I'm 22. She's 19. And we literally have three little baby girls, right? And my ex-wife came from a very rough place where there's no faith at all, because she literally was sleeping in newspaper bins, having very bad things happen to her, that there's no way there's a God. And I grew up believing there's some sort of God out there, right? So, but fast forward through a lot of those years, there wasn't a lot of faith going on. I lost all my teeth, not from drug abuse, but no one took care of my teeth when I was young. So when I was in those early 20s, I would have to go sleep on Whitebird's door in the morning and get a tooth pulled just so I could get back to work. So I only have like five teeth left on the bottom, right? And one of my biggest God stories is, it's fast forward 10 years down the road, I'm getting a divorce from my ex-wife, who's now addicted to heroin, and I'm raising these three baby girls on my own. And I'm praying every day. I'm just trying to not live in this world of hell that I'm living in. And God's telling me that I need to go find my ex-wife, and I have $2,000 saved up to my name. We're living in someone else's house. You probably know him. You remember Big Will, Crazy Will, Ultra Beast?
Yeah.
So I'm living in Will's house. And he's letting me and my three daughters sleep on his living room floor. I'm broke as shit. I'm 30 years old. Everything is hard. And even I'm missing my front tooth. My front tooth broke. I don't have a front tooth. I'm missing all my teeth. And God's like, you need to go find your ex-wife, and you need to give the money you have to her to go get her teeth fixed. And so I take my daughters, I go out on the streets, I find my ex-wife, I give her this money. My daughters are like, you're crazy. You don't have any teeth. I'm like, I don't know. I'm trying to pray. God's saying do this, so I do it, right? 6 months down the road, I'm living with Will. Will is dating a lady named Renee Watts. Maybe you know her. She's a dentist. She was a local dentist.
Yeah.
You may know her, right? She's dating Will. Eric McCormick, who you know as well.
Very well,
His wife drowned in the river this year. This is the same year she drowned. I'm on a hunting trip with him. And for the first time in my life, I pray with someone. God's like, you need to pray with someone. And I'm like, I don't know how to pray with someone. He's cursing God. His wife just drowned. Okay. He's like, God, there's no God. This is real. And I don't know how. I just start praying with Eric on this drive on a hunting trip. I come back home, and Will Dinwiddie is dating Renee Watts. Renee Watts comes up to me, and I don't even know if Renee is a believer. I'm not really sure. It doesn't really matter, right? And Renee comes up to me, and she's like, I want you to come to my office tomorrow. And I go to her office the next day, and Renee sits down with me. And for the next 6 months, she does free dental work, and she completely fixes my mouth. And this was 6 months after I gave every dime I had away to someone who I hated, my ex-wife. She was on heroin, living on the street, left me with three girls. And it was the first real testimony that God is real in my life, because I did something that no human would want to do. And then for 6 months, Renee literally went into my mouth and fixed everything and gave me a smile. And I had no more hole in the front of my mouth, and I was 30 years old.
Wow.
And that was the first big testimony of God showing me that how real he is and how the things he can do. And I still spent the last 10 years trying to ask people if they know anybody else that got 6 months of free dental work and completely changed their life through something like that. And it's a God thing. And it was 6 months earlier, I did something that I wouldn't have normally done to someone that I didn't like.
Isn't that like what life really is about? And I think we forget that is you rarely, and it's not like, you know, God's paying you off. I just mean, when you give it away, it opens a door that it can come back to you, and you don't give it. When you're giving $2,000 away and you ain't got shit, you're not thinking, oh, I'm going to get this back. God's going to do something nice for me. It's like, that's not the right heart. But I think
that's not the right heart.
I mean, it's a good lesson, because if you sit here, I mean, it's kind of like exercise too.
Yeah.
The more you give away,
give,
the more that comes back. And it's like, and I'm reminding myself right now, it's just the same thing in my world right now is, you know, it's like, I get so concerned about, are we going to pay this? And when this is going to come in, is what about this project?
Yeah, and when we live in that state of mind, we're miserable.
Yeah.
When we live in that state of mind, when I wake up every morning and I'm like, all right, Lord, today I'm not going to worry about money. You've taken care of me through the most darkest times ever, and I'm still here. So all I'm going to worry about is I still ask for money. I'm like, Lord, please bless me, but I'm going to make sure that I can bless other people.
Right.
And that I can still enjoy my life, because I think it's okay to enjoy.
Yeah.
But we get in this place where we're trying to like make sure everything's taken care of. And that's when we're the most miserable. But when we're giving and we're just doing it, like, I know this is another little story, but fast forward to 2 years ago, the same wife is still living on the streets. My ex-wife, right? I'm remarried. I bought a little Honda after the fire, a little $2,000 crappy car. I decide one day that I'm going to go stand outside of Burger King and give this car away. And my daughter, who does not like her mother, my 20-year-old daughter, comes to me and she's like, you need to give that car to my mom. And I'm like, I already gave no, hell no.
I gave her $2,000.
Yeah, this was years ago. And I've helped her. The stories are endless, right? So anyway, I go find her and I literally pick her up. She's nervous. Like, what's he doing here? We haven't been married for 12 years. You know what I mean? And I get her off the street and I get her in the car. I drive her back to my store and my gym. I give her the title and $300 cash. And my wife is like, you're so nuts. You're literally giving this homeless person, your ex-wife, a car. Why? And I'm like, I don't know. God's just like, give her the car. Crazy story. 2 weeks later, I'm training for a 100K ultra marathon. I get a random toothache. Haven't had one in 10 years. Haven't had a toothache in 10 years. I'm sitting at a dentist's office on West Eugene trying to get a tooth pulled because I got to go run a 100K ultra marathon in 5 days. My phone rings and it's a different dentist that I trained years ago. His name's Dr. Daniel Lee and runs McKenzie Dental out in Springfield. Calls me. Hey, I'm just checking in on you. What's going on? I'm like, bro, I'm sitting in the dentist office right now about ready to get a tooth pulled. It's a Saturday. All right. He says, leave there, drive to my office. He went and picks up a staff member, drives him in on a Saturday. The office is closed. He meets with me for 4 hours, molds me out of nothing, a brand new tooth, does a root canal, fixes me, puts a new tooth in, shakes my hand and tells me to go away.
Wow.
A week after I did it again, I gave to this person that I don't like. You can't convince me that it isn't real. Like this stuff doesn't happen. This is not, they're not real stories, but it's happened. It's real.
It probably scares the hell out of your wife. She's going, don't give our home away.
Yeah. So she's already at the point. She's like, I can't anymore. But it's funny because she was never a giver. And now she's like, man, like, I just can't help. I just want to give all the time. And I'm like, I know it's crazy. Right. Well, but it's not because I'm doing it for a reason.
No,
you give when it's like we went and helped this family a couple years ago and they had nothing. And we created Christmas for them. Right. They had a couch and that was it. And so I got a bunch of people together from the gym and we showed up to this lady's house and we bring in Christmas trees and presents and beds and TVs. And then my wife, a couple weeks later, a month later, she's like, man, I would love to go check on that family. And I told her that we couldn't. And she was like, why? And I'm like, because we're going to go back into that house and that couch is going to be sold. And that TV is going to be sold and you're going to get pissed because you just went out of your way to help somebody and they sold that shit. But you're not that single mom who's pregnant with two kids and she has to pay rent. And so she don't give a crap about that TV and you're going to go back in there and then you're going to stop giving because of someone else's actions. And you can't do that. You gave, you did a purpose. Now you go try to see how they're doing. And you're going to get mad at that person for giving away or selling the crap that you just went out of your way to give. And you'll never give again. Right. You can't be that person. You have to give because it's something you want to do.
Right. You give not expecting people to do the right thing that you think is the right thing.
Yeah, you can't because they won't. They're
human. I was listening to Jordan Peterson the other day and he was saying one of the biggest things, the biggest problems people have is they get so focused on their own lives. And he said, when you're focused, and I totally agree with this, when you get too focused on your own life, then what you should do is start thinking about other people, calling people. And when you're really down, start paying attention to other people instead of what's happening with your business and your life, because you're just getting narcissistic and you need to get some of that off on other people.
Out of you. Yeah. And I think a big part of my job that I get to do, and I think part of my mental health, why it's so good, is every half hour for 8-10 hours a day, I have a new person that comes in and I get to hear what's going on in their life. And there's like this therapy, this magic therapy that happens. And I think that's been a big part of my own mental health over the last 10 or 12 years, is I'll be going through some stuff, but I get to see 10, 12 people a day that are also going through stuff.
Right.
And they might
you get to forget about it for the day.
Yeah.
Because you don't have time. You've got work to do.
I'm listening to everybody else's.
And you're relational, and that's what people need.
Yeah.
So what if you were to give like one tip to people, what would that be?
I think the biggest tip I would give to people is you have to figure out what your why is, and you have to figure out what you want. If you don't know, I don't care if you're 10 or you're 70, if you don't know what you want, stay busy every single day until you figure it out.
Right.
Don't wait for it to come to you, but go do things. Go work jobs you don't like, you don't want to work. Go do things that make you uncomfortable. Figure out your why, figure out what you want, and then spend every minute thereafter for the rest of your life going after that. And never, ever give up. And once you do some of those simple things, the process will make you better. We all want the meal, but we forget about the process that it takes. But the process is where we grow. The process of getting up and going to the gym 5 days a week so you can run 8 miles in the snow is the reward. But the process allows you to go do that.
Right.
And we don't have to know what we want today. We don't have to have all the answers. No one does. But you sure have to get up and go after it. And you have to go try things and do things. And you can't sit around waiting for it to happen. You got to go get it right now.
You know, what's interesting is I do a lot of live stuff and on TikTok and stuff like that, where there's a lot of younger people. And one of the questions they ask me that always makes me think, that I think it's profound, is because they're kids. And they're going, what would your 64-year-old self tell your 20-year-old self? Mm. And I love that, because they're scared.
Yeah.
They're worried. They're nervous. And I said, when I was in my 20s, I never thought I was going to make it. I knew I wanted to get into some kind of broadcasting. Didn't know what it was going to be. Had no idea it would turn into what it did. I said, so what I would advise you is don't worry about it. Everything's going to be, what I would tell little Ricky is, Rick, you know what? You're going to be fine.
Yeah.
You're going to make it. You're going to do fine. It's not going to be easy, but you're going to be fine and you'll be all right. And I think we have a whole generation of kids coming up who really don't feel like it's going to be fine. And because part of it, I think, is the culture and that, you know, you look in the news, I don't watch it, but you look out there, everybody's a liar and tell
everywhere.
Everybody has stories that are bullshit, and people are going, they want the truth because it sets them free, but they don't know what the truth is.
Yeah.
And I think that's the hard part, is getting that.
And with society, especially with social media now, everybody thinks they have to know what the answers are right now.
Right.
And you just don't. Like, I didn't even know everybody knows me across, not the world, but a lot of people know me as Nick the Trainer Dude.
Right.
And I didn't even know the personal training was a job until I was 25. I didn't even know you could make money that way. I had no idea. And now the only reason people know me is from being a personal trainer. Yet I didn't even know you could make money that way until I was 25, 26 years old.
Right. And you did it. You stuck with it. You learned more. You became knowledgeable about diet and I don't mean the diet. I mean eating lifestyles.
Yes.
You know, I hate the word diet
because
I don't think I could ever diet, but your lifestyle of how you eat, you know, and I think that's another thing people, you know, don't understand is, you know, there's an old line out of the Bible and it's basically saying, this isn't how it's worded, but you know, what you put in is what's coming out.
Absolutely.
So if you put shit in, shit comes out.
100%.
If you put in your mind, if you're focused on bad stuff's going to come out of you. And, yes. and I've learned this one recently, and I'm trying to really fix this in my life, is the judgment I give to other people, it comes back to me.
Yep.
So it's
that's huge. That's a big one. And people do that a lot.
I do that a lot.
Great people do it. Yeah. And that's something we all can work on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could you imagine if people just, you know, here's Billy Bob and he's eating too much and he's doing this and blah, 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 blah. And you go, you know, you as a professional, you could say, here's some things you can do, but then you just let it be.
Yeah.
Instead of toying with it in your brain, or somebody else comes up and says, well, look at, you know, and how many times do you walk into a room and you see the person, you know, who's, I saw, there's a lady at the little gym here in Townsend, and she weighed probably 300 and some pounds. And she's been working with this personal trainer lady. And the other day I looked over at her and I just noticed, I went, wow, she's lost like, God, 80 pounds or something. So I go up to her and I said, I don't know her. And I just said, how much weight have you lost? And she goes, 80 pounds. I said, do you realize that's like a 10-year-old?
It's a human.
And she goes, oh my God. And she goes, I said, you look great. And I said, I noticed you move more. Like you're not shuffling, you're moving.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
awesome. And she goes, thank you so much for noticing. And now she's like my best little buddy in the gym. She'll come in and, you know, because acknowledge people. And there are accomplishments.
And people don't do that anymore, right? People are afraid to talk to people. Society is really strange right now, especially with young people. Like you and I, you're 20 years, you know, you're what, 64, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you're 20 years older than I am and younger than me. Even 30-year-olds, all they've grown up with is devices.
Right.
Right. 20-year-olds, especially, like the only way they communicate is through some sort of a device. So just communicating and being able to walk up to another human being and saying hello and giving them constructive feedback that's benefiting their life. People struggle with that. And it's something we can all work on, you know, saying hello to other people and giving compliments is totally something that is going to benefit that lady's life forever.
Right. I remember doing a story on and I actually recently had him on the show. He's gotten a lot older and his name is Richard Gorsuch. He's from Eugene and he's a painter. And when I did this story, like I was in my 30s and with this. He's a painter and he said, you know, he was working too hard, doing too much. And a friend of his said, you know, Richard, you need to find something that makes you come alive. You need to find the thing that makes you dance and dance. And he picked up a paintbrush and became an amazing painter. And when he said that to me, I was in my 30s and I thought, you know, I think that's what I want with my life is not to paint, but I got to find the thing that makes me come alive and then come alive. And the good news is, I think people go, why are you act so young or something? I said, you know what? Because at 64, I'm still doing that.
Yeah.
I don't have in my plan is there's no rocking chair in my plan. I hope that when I die, that I'm on a mountain bike up on a mountain somewhere and riding, you know, going, oh my gosh, I saw this sunset, bam, you know, and it's done. I don't, you know, that's how I want to live my life. And
yeah, but as far back as I can remember, I was talking about you again just because we were coming on the show today and like your energy has been the same since the day I met you or even ran across you. And we probably crossed paths a lot before we really knew each other because I was always working in a gym and you were in a gym. And we didn't really talk a lot, but we ran across each other a lot and you've always had the same energy, right? And here you are at 64 and still doing that. And I hope to be doing that in 20 years and having that energy. I attempted to run a 100-mile race last year, a mountain race in Oregon. And the gentleman I ran with is 74 years old. And we ran together for 62 miles and then I had to take a break and then he left me and he's like, sorry,
I can't let youth hold me back.
Yeah. Sorry. And I'm like, I'm just dying. Right. I'm on mile 62 and the 74-year-old man, I end up having to stop at 84 miles cause I got a bad injury and this gentleman finishes the race, you know? And I'm like, he's 74 years old and he ran a 100-mile mountain race from Bend, Oregon over to Sisters through the mountains.
Yeah.
And it's just like this gentleman didn't even stop drinking until he was 60 and never started running until he was 64. Wow. And now he's running a 100-mile race in his 70s. Anything is possible.
Well, I have a lady in this HIIT class, if it's for people who aren't you, who don't know, it's high intensive interval training, and it is so hard. I mean, it is so hard. And the other day, so we're doing this thing where, you know, you're standing here and you're going, bam.
Oh, yeah, bam, yeah, yeah.
You're doing it one after the other for 30 seconds, like a Tabata thing. So I'm looking, she's doing it. So finally, and I know her name's Kathy, and I know her, you know, and I walked up. I said, Kathy, can I ask you, like, how old are you? Because she's really beautiful and, you know, thin and just in really good shape and stuff. She's 79.
80 years old almost.
Just she's almost 80 years old, and she's in that class. And, you know, she doesn't do everything everybody else does. But most, I mean, you would never know. I don't look over and go, oh, yeah, Kathy's not doing this. But I'm going, that's how I think God intended for us. I mean, yeah, there's people that get diseases, and there's people that, and that's really unfortunate, and that's horrible. But I think there's also a mindset that I was listening to another Peterson interview, and this lady said, you know, because I had cancer, and they said, when you get cancer, then when you're cured, you're done. You don't sit and go, oh, I'm in remission. It's like, no, it's gone. And then if it comes back, it comes back. But I'm not going to sit and spend my whole life being a cancer survivor.
Yeah.
I don't want to be. And I like my friends like yourself too. And I have another friend, Nick. You know, you're not an addict. I know that's the word. Oh, you're always an addict. No, you're not. If you're not addicted to it anymore, do you have a propensity to that? Yes, I do too. So whatever we have a propensity to, we have to understand that. But it doesn't mean you get to label me for the rest of my life that, you know, like I have many felon friends.
Yeah.
Well, they served their time.
They did their job.
Yeah, they did their thing. They served their time in jail. Now let them out and, you know, and let them work. Let them do the things. You know, people go, you have friends that serve time in jail. I said, yeah, three of them are sex offenders. And I said, but you know, you got to ask more questions than that. And they go, what? And I said, one of them's a sex offender because he peed in a park and he's a felon. Yeah. I pee in parks all the time and I'm not a felon. So I guess I haven't got caught. So I'm not, you know, but
you're not there yet. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that's how it rates. So you need to ask more questions than
you
just the top one.
And it's not our job to judge, and people spend all day long. Everybody is judging everybody. And instead of looking at your own self and being honest with who you are and what you want out of your own life. Right. And start judging yourself, start looking at things we can fix individually.
Wouldn't that be interesting if you could really live an authentic life to the point where you could tell people like how scared you were?
Yeah.
You know, like if you said, you know what I mean? If you said, okay, I'm 64 and I you know, what am I really afraid of? You know, well, I'm afraid of being discounted because I'm 64.
Yeah.
And I'm 64 and I don't like the way people, talk to me sometimes, that younger people, sometimes they act like you're, you know, already old.
You're done.
And and maybe that's why I work out so hard. And it's like, and you know, and I had a successful career and now I'm, you know, doing my thing, but it's like, what, you know, it's not my in this part of my life is not what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
I love being in Montana and I love that we escaped. My wife and I took off and did the most amazingly crazy thing. And it hasn't all worked out the way we wanted it to, but we wouldn't go back and do it differently, you know. But I mean, but if you could really sit down and go, yeah, I've made some mistakes in my life, and it didn't quite work out the way I thought it was. But I also think there's God's in a steering wheel, and He's turning and going, oh, just keep moving forward. I got you on this one. I kind of know what's coming. And you go, oh, okay. You know, and I think that's how it's, you know, that's what I get from your story. And I think that's how a lot of people live is, and maybe that's the, you know, just 3 years ago, I was really into wanting a house and being established at a place. Now I can't ever think of myself maybe owning a home once I sell it. And if I'm traveling around, you know, I might end up in Louisiana somewhere or South Carolina or Texas or, you know, just, I don't know that.
You don't know.
I kind of feel like it's Abraham where it's like, maybe I wasn't supposed to, maybe nomadic life is what really is okay. I mean, I know God says you have a community and you have people, but I don't really have any of those things right now. And so maybe nomadic life would be kind of a way that I'm supposed to go. You know, you never know.
And you still get to do the thing that does make you feel alive right now. And it's stuff like this, right? It's getting on.
Right.
And having that, it doesn't matter where you're at, right?
No.
As long as you can share stories with people, because I think from one thing that I've from watching you all the years and just even chatting with you in the last hour and yesterday was you have a passion right now to share people's stories, to inspire other people to live, right? To get up, you the people that are going to watch this show and watch your podcast for years to come. It's like you're at a point where you really want to change people's lives and maybe motivate them just a little bit to get off their ass and go live a little bit, go try, you know?
Yeah, you were talking about the why. I had a business coach 3 years ago and she said, why do you do what you do, Rick? And I said, because I believe everybody has a voice and they should be able to use it whether I agree with them or not. She goes, well, that's good, but why? And I go, I don't know. My answer. And yeah. She goes, no, why? And all of a sudden, Nick, seriously, I'm sitting there with her, Kathy, and me, and I just started sobbing.
Yeah.
And she goes, what is it? And I said, oh my God, my dad never listened to me. He used to ask me stuff and he'd say, what do you think we should do? And then I'd tell him and he'd go do the exact opposite. It was like, he never even heard me. And so my motivation, and then I became a news anchor. I was a shy kid as a kid. I was real quiet and I became this voice. And it was because, and you know, my goal, I don't want anybody to ever feel like I felt when nobody heard me.
When no one heard you.
Yeah. And so now my whole life has been about making sure that other people are heard. And I think that's why some of my friends that left me during COVID didn't quite understand my motivation, but it was like that robbed me of my voice. It showed me how people can take my voice away and I will never shut up and I will never be okay with tyrannical rule and people telling me what I can and cannot do. That's absolutely. Just, that shit just ain't going to fly in my world. And they didn't so, you know, you kind of, I don't know why I'm therapying here, but what you don't understand is you came against my very core value, the most core thing that I could have. And what I'm proud of, I guess, if I'm proud of anything, is that God gave me the strength to go, you know what? Screw you. Yeah. I will not put that thing back on. I am not going to do what you tell me to do. I did not get the, you know what? And I don't care if you did or didn't, but don't tell me what I have to do with my own life, my body, my choice.
And it's funny because I live with those exact same principles and I don't get on and talk about it. I don't share it a lot, but you're not going to come in. I from where I came from and what I'm doing in my life now, I'm not going to be told like that what to do.
Yeah.
And there's no way in God's creation that you're going to come and actually physically make me do something like that. And just because you want to make me makes me not want to do it. Right. Even more, if I maybe should have done it and I didn't, but it was like, I work too hard to be where I'm at and just have the possibilities I have in front of me from all that work to have somebody that I don't even know tell me to stop doing what I'm doing.
Well, and I had cancer. I'm like, I'm sorry. I survived cancer. You think I'm going to worry about a virus? I mean, I've done this I have been working out for 40 years and doing my thing to prepare for a pandemic like this. Sure. And now you, overweight, unhealthy, are going to come and tell me so to take a pill and I'll be all better. No, see, I've been doing what really, I mean, that's what kind of irritated me too about the whole thing is where was the public health campaign when we are the fattest, most obese nation, and the biggest comorbidity was overweight.
Overweight.
And we did nothing to tell people what could really change their lives, which was not to put this on your face, but to go quit eating McDonald's, stop eating this shit, and get yourself healthy. So we didn't really care about people. We cared about a message, and that makes me not only angry, it makes me sad. And when people say, oh, what about all these people that died? Well, it's because we didn't take advantage of the opportunity and people still are eating and living the same way. Nothing changed.
And they're worse now.
Nothing changed. And that's what I think is that, you know, from every horrible thing that happens in life, we should have something we learn from it. And I think the only thing we learn from that for me and probably you is, you know, that how easily people are willing to give up in fear. and how that's going to go. So that wasn't where I intended us to go, but you know what? That's what I love about doing this. It's like, it's just a conversation. And, you know, for those of you out there in the audience, if you disagree with me, great, that's fine. But it's, we all get to have these conversations and talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nick, I wish I could, it'd be fun to go back like to when you were like 17 and I was probably in the same gym with you. And I probably saw you and, you know, and, but you know, wouldn't it be fun if God could just go, okay, when he could, but if, you know, put out the editing machines and go on. Remember when you talked to that kid and you were seeing him go through, go, what a knucklehead. Or he was looking at you and going, oh yeah, there's that dumbass from the news, you know, and all that, you know, and then all of a sudden how life just continued to connect us. A few years ago, you guys, Nick did I was working with McDonald's of all companies, but we did a pretty funny commercial, but you know what? They never aired it. They got scared because they thought people, because it was all about, their whole fear was people will think we're saying it's a health food. I said, we're not saying it's health food. We're just saying some once in a while you can kind of, you know,
you can eat it. I remember I was dieting pretty hard for a bodybuilding show. And I was like, Rick calls me up and he wants me to eat these cheeseburgers after we get done working out. And I'm like, I had a coach at the time and I'm like, I got to call my coach, Rick. I don't know if I should be eating cheeseburgers right now.
I remember there was guys at the gym and they used to get to those last 2 weeks, you know, and they'd just be cranky and angry because you're starving, you know, you're in all this great shape and your gut, you know, everything looks perfect.
Yeah,
and I walk up to them and I go, pizza, cheeseburger. They go, fuck you.
Yeah, they're just hungry. Yeah.
Hey, Nick, so how do people get a hold of you? Because you can train over online and everything, right?
Yeah, I do lots of online coaching and stuff like that. The easiest way for people to follow me or look me up is just my main resource is just Instagram. So just Nick the Trainer Dude on Instagram is where most people follow me. I use that platform probably more than anything else. The name of my businesses here in Eugene, Oregon are Salvation Fitness and Salvation Nutrition. We have the nutrition shop and then the personal training. But anybody who's interested in meeting or just sitting down and doing some sort of a consult, you can always reach out to me through Instagram and just look up Nick the Trainer Dude. I'm the only one out there. Send me a DM. I would love to sit down and chat with you, answer any questions has to do with health and fitness. And Rick, thanks for having me on. I was excited yesterday when you kind of reached out and I think about you often, you know, just because of our past and knowing each other and watching the life you're living. And I appreciate the opportunity to get on and share a little bit of the story. And hopefully we inspired some people that are going to watch this and just, you know, keep everybody moving forward and believing in the good Lord, you know what I mean? Giving that a chance. So I appreciate it.
I hope that people watching this realize that, you know, you've been given this awesome gift, people. You have a life and how are you living it? And not to feel guilty, but just do, you know, to be going, I want to push till I go out, you know, instead of comfort, it's adventure. You know, there's a great story Jordan Peterson tells. I'll close with this. And it's about Abraham. And he says, you know, Abraham was living this great life and he had money. He was a, you know, herder, his working for his wife's dad. And, you know, he had everything he wanted. And then God came to him and said, would you trade all that for adventure, the adventure of your life? I want to create a nation out of your seed. And his world went to hell. They tried to, you know, he went to a country where they were trying to get his wife, he had to pretend he was her brother so they wouldn't get him. You know, but he had to try to kill his own kid because God told him to. I mean, just a whole bunch of really horrible things happened.
Yeah.
But a great nation was formed, Israel, out of that seed. His promise was kept. And he said, you will have as many children as in the stars. And, you know, God never breaks a promise, but he also doesn't tell you it's going to be, it's not Candyland.
No, and I think that's something I've had to learn the more I've prayed is sometimes it gets harder, but God's choice and my choice or my God's decision and my and mine are two different ones. And if I really believe and I really have prayer in my life and faith like I do, I have to wake up every day knowing that anything can happen today, but I'm just going to keep giving all the glory to God and keep believing that that is the way I want to live my life. And that's the choice I make. And I would say 9 out of 10 days, maybe 10 out of 10, I'm a pretty happy guy no matter what comes my way. And a big part of that is having that faith in my life. So
yeah. And yeah. And you knew, you know where you came from. And absolutely. I think there's a lot of people that especially go through life like you did, who don't know where they came from, you know? And you have every reason not to, and yet you kind of created your own history and made a better story out of it. So anyway, Nick, thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, sir.
And I appreciate your time. And then I had a call from another contractor in Eugene, a big company in Eugene. And there's a woman who is a veteran, served in Iraq, is now disabled. And she hired a contractor to do some work on her kitchen, and she paid him up front and he left. And she has no money to pay him. But instead of going after her for the money, the people who were working on her cabinets, her plumbing and all that kind of stuff are going to finish her house for her. So she's coming on and they're coming on. So that'll be coming up on later adventures as well. I'm Rick Dancer. Thank you for joining us. We will talk to you soon.